You are listening to a podcast of the Geek.io Media Network. For all of our shows and more, visit geek-io.net. And to help support the network, head over to patreon.com/geek.io.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to The Life of an Accounting Droid. I'm your host, as always, Neil, bringing you another exciting episode of Life of the Podcast. So, got enough to go through this week. Not too much as far as tech news goes, but it is heavy on the reviews. There will be a game review, a film review, and a TV show review. And then we'll round it out with the Star Wars profile related to what I'm reading. So with that, I will jump right into it. So to start off episode number 93, I already forgot if I said that or not. We're on episode 93. The theme is Legacy Asset. So this is basically an asset that is on a company's books for a long period of time. Generally, what's considered long-term is greater than 12 months. And on the flip side, short-term is considered less than 12 months. That asset has generally been, to get back to legacy asset, it's considered a legacy because it has generally decreased in value for the company to where it has been, is now being held at a loss. It is usually related to outdated or obsolete equipment, but the company may not want to get rid of it for various reasons, or there's other functions of the company that may need that software or hardware or asset or whatever it may be, so the company hangs on to it for those reasons in the event it is needed. In the case that it's no longer needed, the company can hold on to it to use or in a period of an economic downturn to earn some cash or to clean up the company's books during a recession to make their numbers look less bad or to make them look more favorable, as if they are cleaning up the company and they're able to get some sort of value of it at that time. So with that being said, I'll jump into the couple bits of tech news. So this week, there was that big Google Docs phishing scam. So in case you are getting suspicious activity, make sure to not open any related links or files. Google did post a write-up on their site or their Google blog, and I think the keyword as well as their main new Google blog, so you can read all about it and steps to take to ensure your privacy, things like two-factor authentication, not opening suspicious links and things like that. On a related note, the Google or the Gmail app for Android got an update to now provide an anti-phishing security check. So when you get an email that has a link that may look suspicious, Google will prompt you to let you know that when you click on it that this link looks suspicious. So are you sure you want to open it so you can rethink it or take another route to open that particular link? This week, Hulu announced a new TV service called Hulu with Live TV. This is a $40 a month service that has 50 plus channels of live television content. So essentially, from my eyeballing the list of channels, it looked like a similar channel listing as YouTube TV, but with that 10 of, or approximately 10 additional channels, but there still was not any AMC or Comedy Central. So for me, it's still a deal breaker. So I would actually want to stick with the Google version on YouTube. Back to the Hulu version, you do get 50 hours of cloud DVR and unlimited devices at home, with up to 3 devices outside of the home. It'll be available for iOS, Android, Apple TV, Roku, Xbox One, and Chromecast. And if you want to go commercial free, you can pay an extra $4 a month. So granted, for an extra $10, you can, or to compare to YouTube TV, Hulu does give you that 50 extra or the 10 extra channels for $10 more. But it all comes down to the channels you want and the channels that you're looking for. So for example, for me, Comedy Central and AMC are those deal breakers. So if I am making those decisions between YouTube TV and Hulu with the live TV, I would rather go with YouTube TV because it is that, granted, it's only $5 cheaper for those. There's a $5 difference for that 10 channels. And I think I said $10 earlier, but YouTube TV is $35 a month. So for $5, 10 channels, it's a good value. But if the channels you're getting are not of value, then that is basically a deal breaker. And if AMC and Comedy Central come to one or the other, then that may seal the deal. But you do get 50 plus channels. You get your local channel, sports, random other channels, USA, sci-fi, and things like that. So for me, where most of my shows are on CBS, NBC, or CBS, ABC, Fox, sci-fi, and USA, both packages are equivalent, so it all depends on who you want. The one thing that YouTube TV has that Hulu TV doesn't is unlimited cloud DVR, so there is that to consider as well, depending on how much you watch. So basically, YouTube has made it where, or Google has made it where storage is not an issue. If you will follow shows and you want to watch them, you can get that content. So with that being said, I will jump into this week's game review. So I was kind of looking at games to play that were kind of not really mind tricks, but mind development, something to look at, coordination, has that cool physics look, 3D look, and something to just keep me a little bit challenged, was simple to jump into, doesn't require too much time, I can jump into it, jump out of it, it's not really level based, or I don't have to worry about progress, even though progress is usually a factor. And I came across a game called Hocus. If you play the game Monument Valley or games like it, then Hocus is kind of similar, where you have a figure and you need to move it, get it to the end of the level, but it involves physics, 3D, a little bit of tricks on the eye to get through the level, and you do have to get to the end of the level. So Hocus is kind of along those lines. You basically have a red cube and you need to get it from its starting point all the way into this little hole at the end of the level. So you start off with a straight line to get your idea of the controls, so you can swipe or touch. And as you complete each level gets a little bit more complex. So the levels will not only play tricks on your eyes, but it has that 3D look, a little bit of perspective. So in order to get to the end of the level, it's not going to be as simple and straightforward as you might think. The UI is actually relatively minimal. The controls are pretty simple. As I mentioned, with the controls, it's swiping or touching to move the block. But where the block is going may not be where you see us going. So early levels are pretty simple and straightforward, but later on they do get more complex. So I'll have a link in the show notes so you can check out kind of what it looks like and some of the, I'm still early on in the game, but kind of get to see that progression of how levels get more difficult. So that's basically the bulk of the game. You get, I think, 50 levels for free in the free version of the game, and then for, at the moment, or as of this recording, the full version is 99 cents, and you can get 100 levels. So if you get through the 50 levels and you want more, then for a dollar you can get some more. And then as part of the game, you can, or part of the free game as well, you can build your own level. So if you want to create an intricate level of your own or play around and see if you can create a level that is difficult to play or easy to play, however you want to do it, then you can create your own levels. It's actually pretty simple to do. You start anywhere you want, you go in the direction that you want, and then you set your starting point and end point, and that's pretty much it. And then you can share it to your to the community of Hocus players. So that's all there is for that. The game is available for Android and iOS, so most devices should be supported. I'm not sure if it's resource intensive, but it is relatively smooth to play. The only major controls to adjust or settings to adjust is the sound and audio, so that's about it. But essentially, you just start, you load the game, it'll sign you into Google Play Games on Android. iOS, I'll assume it signs you into Android or Apple Games, and just start at level one, and that's it. You get a quick tutorial and feedback as you need, and that's about it. So the game is Hocus, available for free in for Android and iOS, and I'll have a link, as I mentioned, in the show notes, so you guys can check that out. So that's all there is for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's entertainment segment. So no news that I can think. Oh, actually, there was some news. The trailer for the Dark Tower movie was released this week. So if you're interested in that series, then that is available. I saw it on YouTube. It seemed interesting enough. It's like an apocalyptic, futuristic, Western-style movie. So I did add The Gunslinger, which is a first novel in the Dark Tower series, to my read list. So when I get a chance, I'll read that. I currently have... American Gods scheduled to read after I can finish Star Wars Aftermath Empires End, so probably after that I'll do that. But on that note, I continued reading Star Wars Aftermath Empires End, so I did get a chance, or I did get through the segment on, or the interlude on Jar Jar Binks. So in case you were wondering what happened to him in the period between Empire Strikes Back, or actually, I don't think we even saw, or we might have seen him in we saw him in Revenge of the Sith, maybe, definitely in the Clone Wars, but if you're wondering what happened to him during that period, between that period and The Force Awakens, so essentially the galaxy as a whole, and Naboo especially, blames him for the rise of the Empire. So because of his clumsy nature and people basically having a general dislike of him, he has become a clown and entertainer, or a street clown slash entertainer slash performer on Naboo. So he's basically become a laughingstock, so we kind of see where he's fallen to, and no one talks to him, everyone generally avoids him, except he makes a friend who Jar Jar says they're kind of the same, they're an outcast, no one talks to them, they don't know anyone, and they become friends. When his friend asks him what's wrong, we get Jar Jar kind of musing on what's going on, so I think he understands that people don't like him because they blame him for giving the Emperor his emergency powers to start the war. So there is that, and I guess people don't really understand or know or want to understand that it wasn't entirely his fault, even though he did give those emergency powers. So it's kind of one of those scenes that gives you all the feels that where he was at during the time of the Republic, and where he has fallen to, and that he has no more friends, and he's been shunned by society, especially on Naboo, from the Naboo and the Gungans themselves. That's all there is for that. So as far as what I watched, just the regular stuff. So Into the Badlands Season 2, Episode 7, Black Heart, White Mountain. Gotham Season 3, Episode 16, Heroes Rise, These Delicate and Dark Obsessions. Better Call Saul Season 3, Episode 4, Sabrosito. So we're getting more of the relationship with Gus, I forget the uncle's name, and the drug boss in Mexico, but we're starting to see their relationship and all of that. And then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 4, Episode 20, Farewell Cruel World. So that's basically that. Not much to say otherwise there. General progression of stuff as far as all those storylines are concerned. I think it was in, actually I forget if it was, actually it was last week, so I won't bring it up as far as the Riddler goes, but, yeah, everything was just a progression. We're getting the rounding out of the life model decoys and the framework part of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Gotham, we have the Penguin brought back to life, so there's that. And Into the Badlands, Sonny was stuck in his mind, and more of his struggles there and how they're gonna find Vale. So with that, I'll jump into this week's film review. So I had a chance to watch Seven Samurai. So last week I was sitting there thinking, what I want to watch, what can I rent, and it was between Seven Samurai and the original Magnificent Seven, and I figured I'd start with the source, and so Seven Samurai it was. The movie was released on November 19th, 1956, as a runtime of 207 minutes. So over 3 hours long. A brief overview is that it is considered an epic in Japanese cinema. So overall, a good movie. The summary of it is that a poor village under attack by bandits recruits seven unemployed samurai to help them defend themselves. It has a rating on IMDb of 87% with a Rotten Tomato score of 100% by the critics and 97% by the audience. So overall, it was a very good movie. I did watch the new Magnificent Seven that came out, I think, last year or the year before, with Denzel Washington, Chris Pratt, and a few others. And I could see the similarities and how it did draw heavily from Seven Samurai, so I could see where they were going with that. The only, I don't want to say problem, because I know that it's a time of, or a product of its time, but there were a lot of quiet moments, long shots and things like that, and focusing on individual characters' faces. So that's not necessarily a downside, because I know movies of the era did that quite a bit, but that would have cut down on that 3 hour time frame, but still very well done, still created the effect that they wanted. So the premise of the movie is that, as the summary mentions, that bandits were stealing a village's food and they want to be free of these bandits, so they hire, or they go on the hunt for some samurai, or not hunt, bad choice of words, but they go on the search for some bandits to help them protect themselves, which proves to be a difficult choice, because some want the samurai, some don't. They're afraid of what the samurai will do to the village and to the ladies in the village, so there's that. The thing that was intrigued me, though, was how come there's only one old man in the village, or do they only go talk to the oldest man in that village? So that's something I really didn't understand, but found intriguing, where there's an old man, they do respect him as an elder, and how they want, what they want to do with the, or they want his feedback and input and all of that, as far as what they should do, as far as the samurai protecting from bandits, and his general advice on what to do. Why are all samurai being judged? Why are all samurai judged as being bad? So that's another thing I didn't kind of understand or get my mind around, was all samurai were lumped into a basket of being bad. So I don't know if maybe samurai and bandits and ronin are considered just bad in general. Maybe this was a time when samurai were taking advantage of their power and didn't want to, or were considered bad, or they were just weren't called upon in general to help villages in this kind of scenario. So it was good that they found samurai, but I guess they kind of resolved that, where they said find the samurai who are hungry and want to help, rather than want those who are not wanting for anything and don't really care or don't have that desire to help others. And then finally, why walk when you can run everywhere in terror and confusion? So the one thing that I found intriguing was that there's very few scenes where there were people just walking around, and if they were, it was a quick scene of people talking. But if you want to get around somewhere, instead of having a quick way to get from place to place, just run really, really, really fast, or as fast as you can, and get there that way, and preferably when there's confusion or a lot of people. So just a random weird thought that I got noticed about, I want to say halfway through the movie or so, where people were running just randomly and sporadically. But overall, the movie is really good, so it does deserve the 87% to 100% rating, so it's very good. So if you want an old samurai movie to watch, and a source of movies of this kind of genre, then definitely check out Seven Samurai. It is really long, so prepare yourselves for that. There was even an intermission break in the middle, so if you do need to take a break, there is that also. I did run the movie on Amazon Prime, so I guess it does contain the full 207-minute cut of the movie. Or 206 minutes, I think it was listed at. But definitely worth watching, and then I think at some point I will watch the original Magnificent Seven, but the new Magnificent Seven does seem to respect the movie quite a bit. They do it very well, and so far both movies are worth watching, so I highly recommend it. So the movie is Seven Samurai. It is available on Amazon Prime, and I think it was also available on Google Play Movies as well. So that's all there is for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's TV show review. So as I mentioned earlier, I want to read the next novel I want to read is American Gods, and I mentioned that because American Gods, a TV show, started up this week, so I had a chance to watch the first episode and figured I'd do a review. So the first episode is titled The Bone Orchard and aired in the United States on April 30th, 2017. It has a runtime of 65 minutes, and I think it's airing on Starz, so if you want to stream it, you can get install the app, or you can watch it as an add-on service with Amazon Prime, in case you don't get it, the channel with your TV package. So for me, I did it as an add-on package with Amazon Prime, in case anyone wants to know how I got it. But a summary of the show is that an ex-convict becomes a bodyguard of a powerful old deity looking to reclaim his lost glory. A summary of the episode is that a man, broken and alone, wishes only to survive his time in prison long enough to see his wife again. Although unexpected news releases him from prison early, it is hardly the news he wishes. Left feeling like he is looking at the world from the bottom of a well, he must literally walk the hero's path back to a time where he even resembles sanity. So basically, the man in question is, his name is Shadow Moon. He's a convict who was talking to his wife. He was expecting to see her again. And she passes away. I don't think they really said what happened, but the premise of the episode is that during the time of the funeral, he learns that she was cheating on him with his best friend. We learn this with the interaction between Shadow Moon and his friend's wife. So it turns out they were also friends, so it makes it even harder. She wants, and then his friend's wife wants to get revenge on them by sleeping with him, but he holds back and resists her, basically. So basically, in essence, the time in prison, he's leading us to believe, he wants us to know that he's changed, he's bettered himself, he started reading and educating himself, and he's trying to become a better person. So the thing that I liked about the episode is that the opening sequence has a feel of 300, where we see we have Vikings landing in the new land. They're held back by a stream of arrows, so it's kind of along the line of Vikings, a TV show, but in the opposite direction, where instead of landing and making progress, they're held back. And we see them making a thing out of wood that represents the god Odin, who also has a resemblance to Mr. Wednesday, who's played by Ian McShane, so that's the connection there. So Mr. Wednesday, Ian McShane's character, is playing the god Odin, who in the summary is the one who's trying to reclaim his past glory. So in this first episode, we have him trying to recruit Shadow Moon and showing him that there are powers in the world that he doesn't know about, and that Mr. Wednesday wants him to work for him specifically. So I'm kind of curious as to why he's specifically looking at Shadow Moon as his driver and general bodyguard, and maybe even reading the novel will get that answer, but we'll see also as our show progresses. And then finally, the only other part of the episode to talk about really is that, is Shadow Moon supposed to be the weak link that the Transformer guy can exploit? So at the end of the episode, we see this VR looking thing / Transformer thing jump onto Shadow Moon's face. So I think we're kind of supposed to be in Shadow Moon's head, and this is a VR technology piece that I don't know who the guy is, but I guess he's supposed to represent technology, is trying to recruit Shadow Moon to him. But Shadow Moon is not that easy to manipulate. He doesn't want to play the double agent, so he's kind of saying, how can he assume that he's with Mr. Wednesday, even though he was just hired, but how is he going to try and recruit him this early in? So we'll see how he plays there and kind of what goes on with that. So overall, it was a good episode. It's really dark, so something to be forewarned. Definitely the opening sequence has a lot of violence and gore. There is a sex scene in the episode, I want to say probably in the first half of that show, that it's, I don't want to say it's really off-putting, but it's definitely very, very different as far as the kind of sex scenes we do see. So there is that to be forewarned about. It is a goddess, or related to a goddess. I think it was Bilquis. I know I read it, but I'm drawing a blank on the name. But something just to be forewarned about. It's not really, it's just a different sex scene, so to be forewarned about that. But overall, a good episode, definitely worth watching, and the show does show promise, so we'll go see where we go from there. And when I finish reading American Gods, I'll do that comparison as well and see how faithful they remain to the novel. So that's all there is for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's Star Wars profile. I didn't mention anything about this earlier because I am doing the profile, but it is related to Nima the Hutt / Nima Outpost. And this is the outpost that we see in Star Wars The Force Awakens, where Rey goes to get her portions and sell whatever she finds on in her scavenging duties. So I'll start it off with Nima the Hutt. She was a female Hutt that operated outside of Hutt-controlled areas. She has a particular note because Nima Outpost is named after her. We do have the Battle of Jakku, where she did participate in, and she established Nima Outpost after this battle to capitalize on all the technology scavenged from the battle. So all of those Star Destroyers and the AT-AT and all of the the Empire stuff, that technology that we see on the planet, was from this battle. So that's how, why there's all, it's just left over. No one stopped to reclaim it or do anything about it. The remains were, or any scavenger, or once the outpost was created, any scavenger who scavenger got technology from the remains would take their stuff to Nima Outpost, which was run by Ankar Plot, the guy who stole the Millennium Falcon, and he operated the concession stand to buy this technology for those portions. The outpost was built around traditional hut designs that were brought over from the planet Teth, so that's the origin of some of the layout and things like that as far as why they were designed like that. And once Nima the Hutt was killed, the outpost was taken over by Ankar Plot, so he became the de facto ruler or runner of the outpost. So I just wanted to share a little bit of that background. So in Star Wars, Aftermath Empire's End, we do have a meeting with some of the characters with Nima the Hutt. They find a secret Imperial base, so there is lots of Imperial activity there, and there is a, or we get, basically we get that backstory as far as why Jakku was of importance, even probably to the First Order. So I'm still reading the novel. I haven't gotten to the big battle yet, but that it, there is that connection between the outpost and so that kind of that connection between the outpost and the Force Awakens and the Battle of Jakku as far as post Return of the Jedi characters and stories. So that's all there is for that. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or anything like that, you can email me at headphonesneil@yahoo.com. You can find me on Twitter at patelN01. You can get all links to the subscribe, social media links, all of that good stuff on the website at patelN01.com. And of course, you can get all video reviews and screencasts on YouTube at youtube.com/patelN01. And I know I don't bring this up enough, but if you want to help support the show, you can visit patreon.com/patelN01. And I know we're coming up on the second year anniversary of the show, so look out for some great new things coming your way via the Patreon and Patreon exclusives as well. But that is all for this particular episode. Thanks for watching it, or thanks for tuning in, and until next time.